Indiana Corn Growers Association and Indiana Soybean Alliance present Indiana Ag Policy with your host, Eric Pfeiffer.
Thanks for joining us on the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast. Eric Pfeiffer here from Hoosier Ag Today. And it's been in the news a lot. Make America Healthy Again. We're going to dig into that report and what it really means for soybean growers and for farmers. And to do that today, I welcome in my guest, Mark Messina. Mark is with the Soy Nutrition Institute. Mark, thank you for joining us on the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast. First off, if you can, just explain what is the Soy Nutrition Institute.
Yes, I'll be happy to do that, and thanks for offering me this opportunity. It's an organization that is partially funded by the United Soybean Board and also members of the soy food industry. We're really a scientific organization, although we also have a very strong communication effort and a policy department as well. And we're really, our goal is really to educate the public and especially health professionals about the health effects of soybeans, soy foods, and soybean components such as soybean oil.
And this is really coming into focus largely because of this MAHA report. And we don't need to discuss the policy of this, which is different because we're on a policy podcast. But with you, Mark, I want to talk about some of the things that are in the report, but really we just need to get some education and some science behind it. And I think that that's what you're all about there at the Soy Nutrition Institute, is focusing on the science and the benefits of soybeans and seed oils. Let's start there, because right now, seed oils are getting a little bit of a bad rap right now when it comes to what's coming out throughout this whole process. Talk to me about some of the science behind this.
Yeah, I think you actually underestimated the situation there.
Yeah.
They're definitely getting a bad rap, and it's really somewhat unique. I've been in the field for many decades now, and often when there is a controversy about the safety of a particular food or dietary component, one side might be arguing that it's safe and perhaps the other side arguing that it's potentially harmful. In this case, you have one side arguing that seed oils or vegetable oils, as they're more commonly referred to, as being harmful, and the scientific community, in complete contrast, not only is arguing or making the argument that seed oils, vegetable oils are safe, but actually very, very beneficial. So it's a really unique situation. I don't think I've ever seen anything like this before. And interestingly also, during the time this controversy has really exploded, let's say over the past 3 or 4 years, the evidence in support of the benefits of seed oils has actually increased. Not only have the hypotheses about benefits strengthened, but there have been new benefits that have been identified in the scientific literature.
And I should point out that Mark is the director of science for the Soy Nutrition Institute. So how did all this get lost? I guess that's what I'm trying to figure out is, you know, have we as an industry, have we struggled to get this message across, even to our farmers? Where did this get lost in translation that seed oils, soybean oil, is potentially bad?
Yeah, well, the controversy started a few years ago. It's really a social media phenomenon. I've talked to some of my colleagues, academics, and up until recently, they actually weren't even aware that there was a controversy, because the evidence within the scientific literature, really robust evidence, actually shows very clearly and consistently that seed oils, one of which is soybean oil, are very beneficial. So, you know, in today's world, a lot of our understanding, especially among the public, comes from social media. And oftentimes the scientists who are the real experts in various areas, diet and nutrition, aren't participating very much on social media. So many times social media is after, you know, it's clickbait, it's after getting attention. And when you make more hyperbolic statements, you tend to to draw more attention, a lot of books on the topic, and a lot of podcasts that try to convey the notion that seed oils are harmful. But it's really amazing because there are just years and years of data supporting the benefits of seed oils. These are sort of background. These are oils like soybean oil, canola oil, corn oil, safflower oil, sunflower oil. These come from seeds as opposed to a fruit such as olive oil and palm oil. And these seed oils are generally very high in polyunsaturated fat. And it's been recognized for many decades that when polyunsaturated fat replaces saturated fat in the diet, blood cholesterol levels are lowered and therefore risk of coronary heart disease. We've known this for decades. And increasingly, it comes out that people that consume more polyunsaturated fat are at a lower risk of many chronic diseases, cardiovascular disease, diabetes. But then there's some emerging benefits, such as research showing that cognitive function is improved if you consume higher amounts of linoleic acid, and even body content is reduced if you consume higher amounts. So I will say, though, that there is a sort of interesting conceptual basis for the controversy, because our intake of polyunsaturated fat, especially linoleic acid, which is an essential fatty acid, meaning we need to get that from the foods we consume because it's required for our survival and we can't make it on our own. Intake of this particular type of fat has increased dramatically since the 1960s. And that's primarily due to the increased popularity and use of soybean oil. So some people like to point out that this is sort of a modern addition to the diet. And I think that's a reasonable point to make. It may warrant further investigation. And then they also point out that at the same time that the popularity of these seed oils has increased and our intake of linoleic acid or polyunsaturated fat has increased, there's been an increase in, for example, obesity and some chronic diseases, although death due to coronary heart disease has plummeted during this time. So they look at it being a modern addition to the diet and that it correlates with some adverse health outcomes. Those kind of observations are really great for generating hypotheses. And what scientists do is they take those kind of observations and then use more robust experimental designs to actually evaluate whether linoleic acid or polyunsaturated fat increases risk of these diseases. And what you find when they use really good study designs, sometimes they're following people for decades and thousands of people, what they find is that, again, rather than increasing risk of these chronic diseases, the more polyunsaturated fat you consume, the lower your risk of these diseases is.
Mark, you were telling me something interesting, and I think you touched on it there before we went on the air about just the increase of the use of soybean oil, of seed oils. And you mentioned there during, you know, ever since the 60s, this has really kind of grown in popularity. Where are we right now in the use of soybean oil in particular for everyone's diet?
Yeah, it's really phenomenal. Soybean oil accounts for over 7% of our total caloric intake, which for one food, it really illustrates the important role soybean oil and soybeans in general play in not only the U.S., but also the world food supply. Soybean oil, because of its widespread use in this country, accounts for over 40% of our intake of both essential fatty acids. One is an omega-6 fatty acid, the other is an omega-3 fatty acid. It would actually be difficult for Americans to meet their requirement for omega-3 fatty acids if it wasn't for the use of soybean oil. So it just plays a huge role in our food supply. It's not only a great source of polyunsaturated fat, but it's really high in a couple of different types of vitamin E and vitamin K, really important nutrients. So it's just used in prepared foods, but also in salad dressings and during cooking.
Mark, can you touch on what the alternatives are and some of the health? I know we don't need to bash anyone here, but just the difference between soybean oil, seed oils, and the alternatives and some of those health benefits.
Yeah, and that's one of the issues that people are pondering now. I mean, these oils play such a huge role in our food supply, and if you switch to, assuming the availability would actually meet our need, if you went to something like palm oil, it's high in saturated fat, and there have been studies directly comparing soybean oil with palm oil, and you find that soybean oil outperforms in terms of health effects palm oil. So you don't want to increase saturated fat intake. You know, a few years ago, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration approved a health claim for soybean oil because of its ability to lower blood cholesterol levels when replacing saturated fat in the diet. And some of the other seed oils also have health claims, but the language in support of soybean oil is actually much more impressive than the languages in support of these other oils. But I think all of these oils are beneficial. Soybean oil in particular, because it contains both omega-6 and omega-3 fatty acids, whereas some of the other oils do not. So again, we have just lots and lots of data, randomized controlled trials, and within the scientific community, these randomized controlled trials are the highest form of evidence. This is where you actually give one group of individuals, say, a control food, and then the other group would receive, in this case, perhaps soybean oil. And then you actually look at what happens to their health status over a period of weeks or many months. And these studies are considered to be the most credible because, in theory, the only difference between the two groups is the type of oil that they're actually consuming. And then we have these, as I mentioned, these cohort studies, these prospective cohort studies, where they enrolled literally hundreds of thousands of people when you look at the evidence collectively and follow them for 30 years. And then they record their diet every 3 or 4 years to determine what they're consuming. And then they look how their diet relates to health status. And you can constantly and continually and consistently see that higher intake of this polyunsaturated fat is associated with a wide range of health benefits. In my view, it's actually difficult to identify a solid evidence base that would support concerns about these oils. And I think what happens sometimes is people conflate the oils themselves with the oils being in many foods that may be of low nutrient density. So if you're consuming some foods, which in the olden days you would refer to as junk foods, now maybe you would refer to them as ultra processed foods, many of these foods are high in sugar, have low nutrient density, are low in fiber, maybe high in sodium, and a lot of these foods contain these seed oils. But it's not the seed oils themselves, not the oils that is causing the problem. It's the overall nutrient package in which they are found.
Mark, before we went on the air, I said something about how you might be preaching to the choir here with farmers and the benefits of this. But you kind of jumped out. You corrected me a little bit. And maybe, again, this goes back to some of the social media stuff that, you know, farmers that are producing this even, they're subject to the same misinformation that's out there about the benefits of soybean oil, seed oil. They're subject to that same information and misinformation that's out there on social media. So there needs to be a concerted effort to talk to them as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, at the Soy Nutrition Institute Global, we have a really strong communication arm, and we have focused our efforts on educating health professionals, especially dietitians, so then the dietitians can go out and communicate that information to consumers. But everybody is subject to this misinformation because, again, most people are now getting their nutrition information from social media, and it's difficult for a non-health professional to actually know whether the information being presented is credible. So a lot of times you'll see people recommending, well, you have to do your own research. But, you know, first of all, we have busy lives. Unless you're actually in the field, I mean, how much time do you have to do your own research, as people say? And unless you have a science background, it's very difficult, if not impossible, to actually evaluate the scientific information to know if the study was done right. Also, what you see oftentimes is people cherry picking the scientific literature. So there are thousands of studies that one might look at or evaluate when making a determination about the health effects of seed oils or any food or diet for that matter. And if you're on social media, if you're writing a book, you might pick out 50 studies that support the point that you're making. Whereas in reality, there could be 950 studies that contradict what you're saying. But you're not going to know that unless you're a health professional, which is why you really need to rely on the peer-reviewed scientific literature. Generally speaking, if an article is published in a scientific journal, at least it has some merit. But you have to look at the totality of the evidence. You know, you just don't want to look at one or two studies or one or two types of studies. You need to look at all of it. And when you do that, again, the evidence is so consistent and so strong in support of the benefits of seed oils.
And Mark, I'll make my own comments here, and I'll do the disclaimer. This is not the opinion of the Soy Nutrition Institute or Mark Messina. This is my opinion. This is very similar, and coming out of this MAHA report, it talks about vaccines and everything. It just seems like from a medical perspective, from a health perspective, these are the types of things where, again, there's information, there's misinformation, and people are going to read what they want. People are going to read how they want all of these things, and that just because everyone has different opinions on it doesn't mean it's the right, because none of them are expert opinions. This really is where we need to find the experts.
And controversy sells. You know, if you're writing a book, the more hyperbolic you are, chances are the more people are going to end up reading it, because people want to know something very definitive. They're not interested really oftentimes in looking at how nuanced the science is. So the seed oil controversy really emerged about, you know, probably 5 years ago or so. And that's when I started to follow it. And since then, I've tried to do my best at keeping up with the scientific literature. And I mean, every day there is a study published that is relevant to this controversy. And I will tell you, it's very rare where you see a study that would in any way suggest that these seed oils could be harmful. So the American Heart Association recommends that we consume a certain amount of polyunsaturated fat, and the amount that Americans consume is right in line with that recommendation. So I don't see any reason to decrease our intake of these seed oils or polyunsaturated fat. There is a lot of discussion about the relative merits of omega-6 fatty acids to omega-3 fatty acids and the importance of having a balanced relationship. And to a large extent, that discussion or notion or hypothesis, it really sort of represents outdated thinking. I think it's pretty clear now that both omega-6 and omega-3 fatty acids are beneficial. Americans, you could argue Americans would benefit by consuming more omega-3s. Now, soybean oil does contain omega-3 fatty acids. You can get them from fish. You can get them from algae. You can even take supplements. But the goal shouldn't be to lower omega-6 fatty acids in order to improve your ratio. You keep that omega-6 at the level it is and maybe just consume more of the omega-3 fatty acids.
So, Mark, in summation here, before I let you go, soybean oil, good. Don't really listen to some of this other stuff, because the science says we're all right here.
Yeah, it's better than good. And like I've tried to emphasize, since the controversy really exploded, the evidence in support of seed oils, and in particular soybean oil, has actually grown quite a bit. Those hypotheses about benefits have not only been strengthened, but there's new benefits that have emerged. So the evidence is very clear. And again, sometimes people are looking at foods that junk foods that may contain some of these seed oils, but this problem isn't the seed oils, it's the other components found in that food.
Mark Messina, Director of Nutrition Science and Research at the Soy Nutrition Institute. Thank you again here, Mark, for going through some of this and talking science on this policy podcast. I thought it was really important that we do talk science, since that's really what's again, my opinion, not yours, it's missing from the conversation at this point. So we really need to get some of this out there, and I like to talk in facts. So this was great, Mark. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you. Thanks for the opportunity.
When we come back here on the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast, we are going to talk about the policy side of this with the American Soybean Association. This is the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast. It's presented by the Indiana Corn Growers Association, Indiana Soybean Alliance, with support from Indiana Farm Bureau.
There is strength in numbers. That's why the Indiana Soybean Alliance membership and policy and Indiana Corn Growers Association need you. These organizations represent Indiana soybean and corn farmers on critical and regulatory issues affecting their industry. Along with support from the national organizations, National Corn Growers Association and American Soybean Association, the Indiana members help determine public policy positions on critical issues, including farm bills, trade policy, and ethanol and biodiesel legislation. Become a member of Indiana Soybean Alliance membership, Indiana Corn Growers Association, or both. Visit incornandsoy.org to select a membership. That's incornandsoy.org.
At Indiana Farm Bureau, we serve tree farmers, goat farmers, and in fact, all farmers. With over 250,000 members, Indiana Farm Bureau represents a broad range of farmers and puts power in your collective voice. You also get advice from our subject matter experts, more affordable health plan options, and support for youth programs statewide. So whether you grow soybeans or strawberries, membership means you'll be heard. Become a member today at infb.org.
We're back on the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast. Eric Pfeiffer here from Hoosier Ag Today, and we're talking about the MAHA report. We talked about the science that, quite frankly, might be missing a little bit in that MAHA report in the first half of today's show. Let's talk about the policy itself. And for that, we welcome in Alexa Kumbelik with the American Soybean Association. Alexa is their Executive Director of Government Affairs. Alexa, thanks for joining us here on the podcast.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
Let's just talk about the American Soybean Association's stance on the MAHA report. There are obviously some things in there that, you know, I can take a look at, and I think that farmers can take a look at and say, you know what, I agree with this, I agree with that, I agree with this too, but that doesn't mean there aren't some concerns in here, and those are concerns of the American Soybean Association.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. I think everyone agrees that we do have a problem with childhood obesity and childhood chronic disease in this country, and I think that the goal of addressing that is admirable and something that we all want to be helpful with. Unfortunately, the way that this report goes about that is not the way that we think, makes the most sense. I think that, just on process alone, this report was largely crafted behind closed doors without the input of the folks that grow food, of nutrition experts, or really anyone outside of perhaps a few activist groups. And that's something that ASA and others have tried to highlight and say, you know, if you want to do something that is going to look at, you know, these large problems in our country and find opportunities to address those, you really need to have transparent and robust stakeholder engagement. And that just did not happen with this first report.
To that point, Alexa, I want to play this real quick. My producer, Greg, today. Greg, can you play this sound from RFK Jr. about the MAHA report?
We've gone across farm country together to listen to the farmers in our country and to understand what their issues are. We recognize that we cannot succeed in this movement without the partnership of the American farmer. And we understand the extreme financial pressure that they are under today. Secretary Rollins and I visited farmers in Texas a few weeks ago, corn and winter wheat farmers. And they, matter of fact, told us, and I've heard this from farmers all over the country, 7 out of 10 years they are losing money.
That's right.
That is unsustainable. And we want to make sure that as we go forward, that we keep the people who supply our food and who feed the rest of the world, that we keep them, not only allow them to survive, but figure out ways for them to prosper and to do everything that we can to make sure that our country continues to produce the healthiest food in the world.
So, Alexa, just I guess in response to that, I mean, you just said farm groups like the American Soybean Association, that not included in this conversation about the Maha report, but he says he's talked to farmers all over the country. Something's missing here.
Yeah, and I will say, yes, they did do a roadshow. And the Secretary of Health and Human Services went and met with a few farmers, selected farmers, you know, that I think matched some of his ideals. But in every instance that the American Soybean Association, including Times, and we had our farmer leaders in town asked to meet with the secretary ahead of this report, those requests were denied. And frankly, you know, I think that you know, meeting a handful of farmers is certainly different than meeting with the representatives of, you know, the 500,000 soybean farmers in this country when you are continuing to, in the media, in congressional hearings, you know, bash the health and safety of soybean oil. It's just not something that we think is appropriate and really have been trying to get our foot in the door and make sure that they're hearing our perspective and understanding what not only their rhetoric, but the you know, items that they're putting in these reports do to, you know, consumer confidence in both farm systems in this country and the food systems in this country.
And again, Alexa, you're not alone in this. I know that you're not the only group. There are other groups that are equally as upset about what's coming out. But again, it's not as though everything in this report we're mad about. It's these few things, in particular, the seed oil part of this that we had the discussion in the first half of today's show. That's the rhetoric you're talking about, and it's, you know, I imagine that the National Corn Growers Association, maybe Farm Bureau, we're all in the same boat here, right?
We are all in the same boat. And I do think, I will say, you know, one, the administration, I think to a certain extent, has heard our concerns and our, you know, continuous advocacy to try to get in and have some of these meetings. And so they have started that process. They have been engaging in some stakeholder meetings. But what's concerning to ASA is that the same rhetoric about seed oils, this same rhetoric about, you know, calling into question the safety of pesticides used in farming, that all of that is continuing to be brought up in meetings with our organization and other farming organizations.
And let's move and talk about that now here as well, Alexa. We've touched on the seed oils, the soybean oil rhetoric, but pesticides were a big part of this report as well. And I know that the American Soybean Association, you've got some concerns there too.
Yeah, we have quite serious concerns with the conversation about pesticides that has been raised both in this report and again by some of the principal authors of this report in the way they continue to talk about this. You know, in the public, on TV programs. And, you know, frankly, it's just unacceptable that this report should try to connect pesticides with chronic health conditions in children when our regulatory system is considered the gold standard for protecting human health from pesticides.
And you mentioned, I mean, there are countries that take this to the nth degree, and we've talked for years about that, not really following the science. Is that what we're missing here? I mean, are we missing the science?
Yeah, I think, you know, you heard earlier about, you know, this term of cherry picking studies to get the answers that you want. That was very clearly happening as the pesticide section of this first Maha report was developed. Some of the studies that they used were not actually studies, but were opinion pieces to get across the points that the authors wanted to make. calling into question specific pesticides and claiming that they are unsafe. It also used the first version of this report, cited studies that didn't even exist. I think, you know, one of the things that we said was if this report went through a robust comment process and public stakeholder process, as most things do in this country, you would have avoided these types of mistakes and perhaps would have, you know, gotten to a place where we could maybe agree on the content here. But, you know, bottom line is that with the pesticides used in this country, they all go through an EPA risk assessment that you know, goes through thousands of studies, you know, both public and private studies related to these chemistries before a determination is made. And, you know, I think that is the bottom line here. We believe in a science-based process. And we feel as though this report did not actually get to that point.
And you mentioned the EPA process in approving these pesticides. It's not like a, you know, 2 or 3 month process. These items are in the pipeline for years, and you know, the companies that are making them, they have to follow all the rules here. I mean, there's really no way around it, right?
That's absolutely correct. And it is a rigorous process and can be slow. And, you know, there are many ways that you can improve the system and perhaps speed up approvals, you know, bring in more folks to review these processes. And so I do think that we can point to some opportunity there where perhaps we can work together to create, you know, a more efficient system. You know, that being said, I think that, you know, one piece that's missing here is that our farmers are trained on how to apply these pesticides. Our farmers are, you know, the best in the business at this. And, you know, they are the experts at farming. I am not an expert in farming, but the members that sit on our board are. And I think it would do a world of good for the members of this MAHA Commission, the authors of this report and the next one that will be coming out in August. It would do them a world of good to sit down with farmers, not the farmers that they're choosing, but the actual farmers that are the grower leaders that we rely on at these national ag associations, to hear their perspective and understand the process that they go through on the farm every day.
Alexa, this really is just an interesting, you know, topic here, because you're right, our farmers are our experts and they know best how to go about producing the most food with the fewest resources that they can. And I guess that's what's surprising to me about this whole report, is we keep talking about the fact that we need to feed so many more people, you know, by the year 2050. Our population's going to grow worldwide and we need to feed all these people. But it seems like at every turn, the tools to do that are being either taken away, or they're being discussed with this rhetoric to not allow farmers to do what they do.
Yeah, and that's a huge problem. And it's something that we continue to share with this administration. Not only are they, you know, trying to poke holes in the farming systems that work, that are safe and effective and help us grow more with less. These are tools that are sustainable. They are environmentally sustainable. They are economically sustainable. And to take those away is going to cause a world of hurt on the farm. But in addition to that, this is an administration that campaigned on lowering food prices. And when you start talking about perhaps removing soybean oil from the market, and then, you know, needing to rely on other fats and oils that are perhaps imported or cost more money. And you also talk about removing the ability for farmers to grow their crop effectively. That once again is going to cause food prices to rise as you have less that you can produce. So, you know, I think that there is a place here that we can all work together, but I think that there's also a lot of unintended consequences that the commission was not thinking about when this first report came out.
And again, I go back to this because I don't necessarily want this to be a podcast that's about ripping this report to shreds and everything in it is bad, because quite frankly, a large part of our listener base here at Hoosier Ag Today, conservative farmers. That's a large part of what we have here. But I think it's important that we talk about these specific instances. You know, again, we don't have to throw the whole report in the trash can for the most part. I think that you touched on it. The goal, the ultimate goal of trying to, you know, help curb childhood obesity and really to make America healthy again is a valiant effort and one that's worth pursuing. It's just these things within the report that we've got to get a handle on. And I guess the question to you is what's next? What is ASA trying to do to help curb this?
Yes, we're continuing to have meetings with folks in the administration. We want to educate them on our perspective as it relates to the health and safety of seed oils and the health and safety of pesticide application on the farm. You touched on it. There are good things in this report. We all agree that kids should have more exercise, that they should be on their phones and on computers less, that they should be consuming more fresh fruits and vegetables. These are all things that we can agree on. The second report, which is due to come out in August, is set to look more at systemic and structural changes that we can make in our government to help make America healthy again. Our concern is what does this mean for the two items that we talked about? Seed oils and the edible oil market here in the U.S., and also the availability of chemistries for our farmers to farm effectively. And so those are the two items that ASA is truly focusing on as we go in and continue to educate members of this administration, as well as our champions in Congress. This has not necessarily been on the top of everyone's list. There are a million other things that are going on that are taking priority here in Washington. And so ensuring that our champions on Capitol Hill and our champions in the administration are aware of our concerns and understand where we're coming from is truly the most important thing that we can be doing right now as we look forward to this second report.
And I know that, you know, right now the farmer leader of that organization has been very outspoken on this. It's going to take farmers stepping up and being a part of this process. They've got to show up and make their voice heard, right?
That's right. And we do have our farmers coming to DC next month, and we're excited to have them be part of that conversation. They are a better advocate for themselves than I could ever be for them. People love to talk to farmers and hear directly from them about what is going on. And we do our best to make sure that they can get out here, that they can have those conversations with lawmakers here in DC, and share what it is that they do on their farm and why this is concerning to them. At the same time, I think it's important that ag organizations go in and talk to this commission about the proactive things that they can do that maybe will help them achieve some of these goals. I don't want this to just be farmers saying no to things in that report. I think that we can all get together and come up with some proactive solutions that could improve the health of America for everyone.
Alexa, just as we wrap up here on today's podcast, a plug for your organization, for the Indiana Soybean Alliance Membership and Policy Committee. That's how you become a member of the American Soybean Association, is by becoming a member of the Indiana Soybean Alliance Membership and Policy Committee. This is not part of the checkoff, something that we remind folks. These are separate things. Just talk about all of the things that the American Soybean Association does for Indiana farmers.
Yeah, we are the leading voice in Washington on all things farm policy, trade, energy, you name it. We are here to be your voice as we talk with folks that are making the decisions in D.C. Every member has the opportunity to come out here and speak with their members of Congress, to be part of our conversation as we develop our own domestic and international policy goals at ASA. And having this voice and this opportunity out here to make sure that our soybean farmers are part of the conversation, regardless of what decisions are being made in Washington, is critical, so that we're not left behind.
And if you're interested in becoming a member of the Indiana Soybean Alliance Membership and Policy Committee, as well as the Indiana Corn Growers Association, be sure to visit incornandsoy.org. Alexa, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today. Any final thoughts here from you as we wrap up?
Yeah, I would just say, you know, at the end of the day, I think it's really important that farmers are engaged and watching what is happening with the Make America Healthy Again Commission. Again, there's a lot of good things in this report, but there are items that are very concerning that could impact our industry dramatically. And so being engaged, keeping yourself up to date on what is happening, we share as many resources as we can. But having these conversations back home, talking to your lawmakers, talking to your neighbors, is really critical in the coming months.
It could truly change the way we farm if some of these things continue on. So, Alexa, thank you for your work, and we certainly appreciate you joining us on the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast.
Thank you.
That does it for this edition of the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast. We again thank our sponsors, the Indiana Corn Growers Association, the Indiana Soybean Alliance, as well as Indiana Farm Bureau. Thank you for joining us. Hopefully you learned something here during this one. A lot of science, a lot of education about what's going on in this MAHA report. We will get together again soon and talk more policy here on the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast. I'm Eric Pfeiffer, Hoosier Ag Today, Indiana's Farm Network.